If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Galactic Command. This evening, our seminar topic is, It's How You've Dreamt It. So let's start with an integrative process. Take a deep breath. And call yourself forward from the very top of your head, down through your body, clearing your chakras, and infusing your whole being from head to toe with the presence of the living God. That presence of the living God indwells you as your breath, as the life force beating your heart, as the wisdom of knowing that illumines your mind, as the empathy and compassion that causes you to lose sight of self in reaching out to meet another's needs. God lives in you as you. You are a living embodiment of the Beloved. In that awareness is the joy and the peace and the security that you sought. Every place, perhaps, but where it could always be found. And that's at that place, that sacred spot in the center of your heart's shrine that you alone can find. And you will find it when you seek it with all your heart. No one is ever denied when they ask a right. And asking is not of the lips. It's the evocative cry of the human heart seeking to know and merge with the Sacred Heart. So take a deep breath. And flood your body with a violet flame, cleansing and purifying, releasing any energetics that you don't have to carry around anymore. Any grievance, any misconception, anything you've outgrown that has become obsolete baggage. Allow it to dissolve in the love that ever surrounds and fills and infuses you with divinity. Take another deep breath. And escort it all into the love that is. And present yourself as innocent as a child. And allow yourself to be born into a new reality. So many people who seek my counsel these days have been doing so because they've been experiencing a sudden loss of identity, a sense of purpose,
a vision, their idea of what their mission was, or even who they are. All of a sudden, it's all crumbling. And that is part of the process. Isn't it wonderful to realize that your unhappy story is a dream from which you are now awakening? The identity that you are can never cease to be. It is pure, ever-expanding, divine awareness, ever-new revelation, a sense of omnipresent beingness that infuses and indwells all things with delight, with freshness, with wonder. And it is that sense of quiescent serenity of mind and emotion that is called ananda, or bliss, or samadhi, that state of equanimity. It is to be perfectly joyous and at peace all the time, with no interruptions. And that comes from being yourself, fully and completely. That is what it means to awaken from the dream. And that is going to be the experience of every single being. Nothing can deprive you of awakening. Why? Because you are God's incarnation. And God is willing itself awake. That's it. And so, awakening is happening now. And with it, we lose the limited self, the dream, and we awaken to reality. In the process, that sense of loss is of something that you never truly wanted anyway, that you never really needed. And you will never lose anything that you truly love, that you truly value. Part of the awakening is awakening to the fact that you didn't have any idea what true value consisted of. Nor did you really know what you truly wanted, and much less what you truly needed. I had the strangest experiences the other day. Experience, I should say. And I'll share it with you because maybe you'll have a similar one, or maybe you've already had this one. I was totally caught off guard and stunned. I was praying, having my God talk. And I had asked for something related to my present life. And suddenly, I heard Sai Baba's voice very clearly say, "You want me to prolong your dream state? You say you want liberation, yet you keep clinging to the dream. You cannot have it both ways, as one cancels out the other. Either you continue dreaming, or you awaken. Which will it be? Do you want to continue dreaming your present life, or do you want to awaken as God?" Well, when he said that, I suddenly was looking in a nanosecond through his eyes. In a very uncomfortable moment, I suddenly realized I was really dreaming and only imagining that I was awake. Ouch! Here I thought I was awake. And you know, for the first time perhaps, I really saw for a few seconds how this state of dreaming keeps us in that constant becoming, but never arriving. That's how we keep the dream in place. And with it, our unhappiness, our anxiety, our worry, our insecurity. You know, our whole human life is only a dream of limitation. And I don't think we need to be convinced too much about this. It's kind of self-evident for most of us. So we dream without ever arriving at being, and thus not ever truly living. And we keep asking God to prolong our dream and to bolster our illusions. You know, in our spiritual group, the movement of spiritual inner awareness, we don't pray specifically. We don't tell God what to do for people. But we put everything in the light of the Christ and the Holy Spirit for the highest good of that person and everything concerned in that situation. Because we've realized that only Divine Spirit knows what each person needs. And we have no ability in our human consciousness to have the slightest idea of how to pray. You know, when it says in the scriptures, and the true worshipers of God will worship God in spirit and in truth, how can the human ego mind, with its dreamlike semblance of living in reality, possibly discern beyond the dream clearly enough to know how to ask correctly? And that's where it said, you know, be careful for what you ask, because you have to be willing to receive. Someone the other day asked one of the travelers for something that could only actually be received if they were disincarnated. And the traveler stopped and pointed out to that person, be careful what you're asking here, because this is something that would require you moving into another level without your physical body. And of course the person said, oh, no, I don't want to leave, I don't want to die. So there again, it's best to put everything in your life in the light of the Christ and the Holy Spirit for whatever is for your highest good. Then, whatever could be given to you through Spirit, through divine intercession, will be given. Moreover, if you don't ask, then it falls under the line of karma that you've come in with. Whereas if you had thought to put it in the light, sometimes another way that bypasses that karma will be given to you. When you come in, you have just enough light to sustain life and a certain level of awareness that you have cultivated up into that incarnation. So anything above and beyond that, you need to evoke and ask for. Learning to ask clearly for what you truly need is a skill, I think, in itself. And sometimes you say, I don't know what I truly need, Lord, but you do. please bring forward whatever would be for my highest good and highest advancement spiritually at this time, according to my highest rate and capacity. That way you've covered your bases. You will not be given something that you can't handle. I remember quite a couple decades or so, there was a famous saying, you know, one of those colloquialisms that we're fond of, that was, "Suck it to me." And sometimes people in their zeal for more of spirit would say, "Suck it to me, Lord." Well, what was standing in the way of their greater infusion of spirit was their stuff, their karma, the things they hadn't handled. So when they said, "Suck it to me," boy, did the Lord's karma suck it to them. So again, if you can ask that whatever is troubling you be resolved through grace and ease and the love of God, boy, you sure cut yourself a lot of slack. It's always possible. Nothing with God is impossible. So ask big. Ask beyond your capacity to know what you need. And give God complete wiggle room and leeway to have at it in your life, in where you want to go in this incarnation. Some of you really have a strong directive to step into God consciousness in this lifetime and be liberated. I would be one of those souls. So that really narrows down where you want to place your attention if you want to complete in this lifetime. You're going to have to bypass a lot of the things that people are going to be wanting to do that don't care if they're going to dilly-dally around for another 14,000 lifetimes or more. But if you want to go home in this lifetime, you have to be willing to wake up. And waking up means being comfortable with not being in control, not knowing what's going on, feeling really uncomfortable as parts of your life simply dissolve and vanish and crumble before your eyes, perhaps even losing everything. You know, your level of attachment to the material world is going to be seriously confronted, because that's really the only thing that causes us to reincarnate, is our attachment to things that can only be experienced and reaped in the material world. And there's a lot of them, not just this earth. There's a material realm on every one of the planets. There's not life in all of the material realms and all of the planets in terms of the dense physical life that we have on Earth. That's why most people come to Earth when they want to finally master the material, dense material third density, this physical body. So this is the school, the launching pad for liberation. And this is the time for that to happen for many of you souls. And you'll probably know who you are, because everything you've tried has sort of failed and disappointed and left you feeling empty. And there's a reason for that. Everything in the material world is impermanent, transitory, and a passing parade. The minute you try to hunker down and keep anything consistent and solid and own it and possess it in the material world, you're going to be disappointed and left empty. Eventually, enough experience, enough rounds down here on this not-so-merry-go-round, and you awaken to that. And you learn to live in the world without attachment to the things of the world. You allow yourself to experience what's present for as long as it's present. And when it leaves your life, you say, "Okay, I guess I've completed with that. I guess God has whatever is next for me." That applies to relationships, that applies to material things, that applies to everything. Everything that's in a material form will not be in this world in another 100 years. Think about that. For many of you, it's not going to be present for maybe a very few of those years. So don't be attached to any material form, because what you really want is the love and the godness that's in that form. And sometimes you have to put up with a whole lot of manure to get through to that pony, or a whole lot of stuff, karma, to get through to that love and that person. And when you finally do, unless they're God-realized, it's going to disappoint you, because you'll go codependent and look to each other for the love that only the God within you can give you. So, again, it's time to wake up. So to continue with my experience, in that same instant that Baba asked me if I wanted to continue dreaming, or if I really wanted liberation, I also saw how utterly useless all of this talking and writing about spiritual awakening is. All of these seminars, everything is, you know, it's a waste of time. Because it's all part of prolonging the dream of becoming. Why do people go to a seminar? Because they think they don't have whatever it is the seminar promises to give them. They're coming to get something that they feel they lack. Well, granted, sometimes those seminars or whatever will trigger your own innate knowing, but realize that every time you find a book that you really like, or you go to a seminar that really tweaks you and gives you something that feeds your drive for God realization, it's only because you're already recognizing it as a truth that you've already realized. Sometimes you don't realize it until it comes out of someone's mouth or you read it in a book. That's why we like things, and that's why we don't like things that we don't have an equivalent state of consciousness within us that matches it. That's why people don't believe certain things. They don't have the place in their experience to house that occurrence. You can't see something that you don't have a mental equivalent for within your consciousness. That's why when Magellan's ship landed, the natives of that particular island where they landed couldn't see them. Only the shaman, who was used to seeing in the second attention, could discern a shimmering energy in the distance. But he, too, had no mental equivalent to translate that shimmer into a mental picture and cognition in the brain of ships. So everything in the unmanifest world remains but a shimmer, that until we have a mental equivalent, a spiritual equivalency, a frequency within our consciousness, we will not be able to see it on the inner planes, nor manifest it on the outer, because the outer is simply a reflection, a mirroring, a resounding of what is experienced in your state of consciousness. So back to my experience with Baba. I suddenly felt like I didn't know where to go or what to do at that point, which I have to tell you, for me, was very, very different. I always know where to go and what to do. Ho, ho, ho. At least I thought I did. So let's say that some of the things that I have used to bolster my sense of being as a spiritual person, as a spiritual teacher, as a mentor, as a commander, as a whatever you want to call it, I clearly saw that I, along with everyone else, was dreaming this world, this life, and this dream identity. of being a human being on earth, and that it was, you know, all imaginary. None of it is life as it truly is, because for the most part, it is something we all endure. I mean, think about it. We all endure being here. Why? Because we have the hope that one day something is going to change and be different. Well, isn't that true? You know, so many people were disappointed because nothing apparently happened that really radically changed anything in people's lives to where they were more spiritually enlightened and illumined with December 21st, 2012. There was a subtle shift, but again, it was like a shimmer on the horizon that didn't have any way to land in most people's life or awareness. And so they got up and went to work and did the same old thing the same old way. So who is happy and still imagining that they are human and that this world is real? Go ahead. Who? Right. No one. No one is truly happy and believes that they are a human being in this world, the world that you wake up and turn the TV on and you see CNN describing for you. So I certainly didn't ask to see this, at least not consciously. I'd actually asked Sai Baba, God, for more illusion. Yeah, more illusion, more dream, more samsara. So I knew it was Sai Baba confronting my reluctance to jump naked and empty into the unknown. Yep, I'm afraid we have to go naked to God. We came from God naked, and we return naked. By naked, I mean divested of a self, a story, and an identity that we have made up. It's our dream, nothing more. Haven't you had those dreams? My gosh, I sure have. Where, when you wake up, it takes you a few moments to adjust. I mean, it's such a reality jolt because the night dream was more vividly real than awakening to your daydream. Haven't you had those dreams also where you lost someone in a dream and you were sobbing so hard that you awaken with your pillow was wet and your face is streaming with tears and your nose is all stopped up? John Roger has said that that's when you're working out karma primarily on the emotional realm or the causal realm. And I think that's true because when I was working through those levels, I had a lot of those kind of dreams. I used to dream also many times that I was deeply in love with this wonderful man, and I had just given birth to our child, and I was holding our child, and we were so happy, and I was nursing the baby, and bam, I woke up, and there was this wrenching sense of loss. The beloved man I was married to wasn't there. There was no baby that I'd given birth to. I was alone in this room, and I thought, wow, consciousness is so strange. You pass from dream to dream, state to state. And yet the predominant state that we seem to replicate, that we call our daily life right now in 2013, is the predominant story we keep telling ourselves over and over again. Until our inner and outer life reflects that reality, you'll find that your imagery reflects your daytime involvements and belief system. I know, because I shifted belief systems many times in my life just to see what would happen. And it's interesting how your dreams and the people you say in your dreams shift accordingly. the imagery that appears in meditation will shift accordingly. So you realize that God is formless love, that, again, we endow with imagery that is our preference in any given lifetime. In truth, we have been followers of every form and every name of God. We have been those who have inhabited every color, every race, every creed, every continent. We have spoken every language. We have been everything. And that's how God, as us, samples and experiences relationship. Because you might say, well, what's the point of all this? The point is God wanted to experience love. And love can only be experienced when there is a loved one. It requires relationship. Sure, you can feel loving when you're sitting alone. Sure, no problem. But the test comes when you move out in the world. There you find out whether or not you truly are loving. Oh, it's nice to be easy to be loving to people who are loving to you. But what about those people that creep you out, that make your skin crawl, that you just want to run at the first sight of them? What about them? Can you love them too? Well, probably not. Not unless you're God-realized like Sai Baba. Because it takes moving into those higher levels of consciousness to move into Christ consciousness, which is that state where you can love all things unconditionally. Doesn't mean you have to cozy up with them, but you have a detached love. It looks very different than the human version. Very laid back, very detached. So, Sai Baba also, during one of many interviews that we've had with him, told us that really we should not pray to God for anything but to have greater love and devotion. That without devotion, though a person could be a multi-billionaire and even rule the entire world, that without devotion, one's life amounts to a zero. That was pretty intense. Wow, without devotion, everything in your life counts to zero. So, Sai Baba's definition as a cosmic avatar of devotion also differs from what we commonly associate with being devoted. He said that devotion is not weeping or any negative state. Devotion is seeing the all in all you see. In other words, it's to see all life as one. And, as he puts it, to be alike to everyone. So Sai Baba, who is a full manifestation of God consciousness, says that he has no personal identity. He would often greet us as Sai. Of course, that would be kind of confusing to us, usually. He said that he simply is the formless divine who has assumed form in response to the devotion of the godly. So it is humanity and their desire for God's manifestation that causes the birth of an avatar. And an avatar is always an embodiment of conscious divinity or an aspect of conscious divinity. It's not a state that one can develop. It is a state that you're born in. And Baba is fond of saying that we are his form, his dwelling place, that he literally experiences himself living as each one of us. And that is why he knows each one of us inside out, literally, because, as he says, he is the dweller in every heart. Wow. So if you want to experience him, just take a deep breath and ask Sai Baba to give you an experience of God in your heart. It doesn't have to be his form. He's not attached to it. He says he is the embodiment of every name and every form of God that man has ever worshipped from the beginning of time. So whatever your concept of God is, he will take that form to you. Know that he is simply formless divinity. So again, just ask God, the Lord, to give you an experience of his presence and love within your heart. Or however you can best experience it. And take a little time each day to be with your request, because I promise you it will be answered. There's no way you could sincerely utter that prayer and not have an experience with God. And here's another thought that really caught my attention. He said that in truth there is no such thing as separate will or a separate identity. That we are literally being lived by God. That in reality, there exists no otherness in all of cosmic existence but God. So what covers that up so that we don't immediately know and experience that is mental conditioning that we've bought into instead of the truth that would set us free. The truth that would set us free is that God alone is. And wherever you are, God is, and all is well. All is well. And it's all good because it's all God. So there's a really good seed thought to contemplate. I am being lived by God. And then begin to ask yourself, what is this I? What is this I that's being lived? And meditate on that. I think it will produce some powerful revelations for anyone that does that. But sometime when you get stressed about what to do or a decision to make, try that. I'm being lived by God. This situation is being worked out by God. God is present here, calling the shots. God has this handled. God already has a way out of this and will show me when it's time. God already has the answer I seek, and it will be revealed when I really need it. So there's a way to make everything in your life serve God consciousness by being more conscious of God as you go through your daily life. So what if that was true? What if the I imagine myself to be was a fictitious character my mind made up? What if I dreamt the whole thing? What if I were to suddenly really awaken to my godhood? Yeah, well, there you have it. Back to Shakespeare. To be or not to be? That is the question. Well, if we're being lived by God, then it stands to reason that God will also awaken each one of us in the perfect timing to awaken from this dream. In the perfect moment and manner. And that's another way to look at it. Because, you know, we came into the dream wanting to have a dream. We wanted to enter the holodeck and have a fictitious character that we could role play in. We wanted this. We desired it. We, as spirit, extended consciousness into experiential holograms. Every one of us is an experiment in consciousness. We're all a probing into different perspectives, different mindsets, different states of being and expression. We wanted that. It wanted that. She, he wanted that. God, the Spirit, creator of all, wanted that. So let's not ignore the fun that could be had in the dream. If you want a dream, no problem. This is the dream field. This is the field of dreams. But it's good to choose pleasant dreams, because why torture yourself with nightmares? You know, I've been around Sai Baba long enough to have witnessed the most amazing awakenings. It could be a person at any age or stage of life, and suddenly, bam, they just simply wake up and are God-realized. I've seen all sorts of interesting things. So the Course in Miracles speaks of the ego's nightmare being the state that most are in. And the ego's nightmare is where we see a world of war, conflict, pain, and suffering, and bondage, limitation, and vexation, and vengeance. We see a cruel world. And that's the ego's nightmare. And then, somewhere along the way, the pain and suffering becomes unbearable. And this causes one to begin to seek for another way. And they adopt some form of conscious spiritual path. And at that point, they awaken from the nightmare to a happy dream. So most of us that identify with being light workers are in the happy dream stage. We're doing our spiritual practice and loving and serving humanity, and we're fulfilling our missions and seeking to contribute something of worth to the bettering of this world. And we dream a happy dream of ascension and reuniting with our star family and our twin flames and so forth. And yes, it's a happy and sweet dream. And one we are enjoying so much, actually, in truth, very few of us really want to awaken beyond that. For if we really did, we would totally awaken and be all of it. Well, I can't speak about that because I haven't done that yet. But I think you catch the drift. We're kind of all in this pie, aren't we? So Sai Baba said, we seem to be enjoying this game that we are playing of being a limited human being, and we attach to our dream identity and role play. That's true. What kid wants to come in for supper, even if it is the first or the last supper or whatever supper or the wedding feast of the Lamb, who wants to come in when you're enjoying your play, right? The Father says, come, I have a place prepared for you. I say, no, not yet. I just want to play, please, a little bit longer. So Baba said, if we can understand how dreams arise within our own mind, we will be able to recognize and realize that the whole of what we see as this universe arose as a dream within the mind of God. You know, the thought that we are thoughts within the mind of God has often been taught in the new thought system of unity and the religious science types of churches. But this gives another level of insight into that. So God dreamt the macrocosm, and we are dreaming our own microcosmic lives. And we're having fun while we're doing it. So perhaps that's why Sai Baba teaches us to only ask for greater love and devotion. For when you win the heart of the beloved, you will inherit all that he has. I'd like to share a little story here from the many that Sai Baba likes to tell us to bring home his spiritual teachings. There was an Indian Raja, a king, who had three wives. And before he left on an extended journey, he asked each wife what he could bring her as a special gift upon his return. Well, the first wife said she wanted some saris, woven of pure golden thread, and some gold jewelry encrusted with precious jewels. The second wife, who was more of a scholarly type, said that she wanted some rare books and esoteric manuscripts. And the third wife, however, said, "Beloved, I want only you. If I have you, I have everything my heart desires. So please, come home safely and soon." When the king returned, he gave the saris with woven golden threads and the jewel-encrusted golden jewelry to the first wife, and she was thrilled and totally happy. To the second wife, the king gave her the rare books and esoteric manuscripts that she longed to read, and she was completely satisfied and content. The third wife, overwhelmed with joy at the sight of her husband, ran, embraced, and kissed him, whereupon the king swooped her up in his arms and carried her off to their private chamber, where they merged in intimate union. And God is like that king. He will also give you whatever you want and desire, until you desire him alone. Then you will become as one, merged in divine union and intimate oneness. So, Baba says, "I will give you what you want until you want what I've come to give, namely liberation itself." The avatar comes to liberate souls from this dreary cycle of births and deaths, and that is the purpose of the Psi avatars. How incredibly fortunate we are to be born as contemporaries sharing this planet with the three Psi avatars. Shirdi Sai Baba, who was born in the 1800s, Satya Sai, who was with us until 2010 physically, and now Prima Sai, who is present, but as yet undisclosed as far as his location or manner of manifestation. But the idea is to not follow an outer form. The outer form, in every case, is part of the dream. You might say it is the only thing that's real in the dream, because Sai Baba said that when you have a dream at night, you're simply recycling your thoughts, beliefs, habit patterns, and the things that have been unresolved in your daytime. But when you have a dream of him or any other manifestation of God, that is the only dream that's real. You can't force that kind of a dream. Baba says it comes as a result of his grace and your readiness to have that experience. Everything in the career of a divine avatar is predetermined because they all come back in time from the future. So everything has already been resolved and completed at the level in which they come from. It is being unfolded in time. Know again that time exists only in the human mind. There is neither time nor space anywhere but in the human mind, as part of the ego mind, which sees things in terms of sequential linear distancing and sequential linear traveling. Spiritually, you, quote, quote, move. You don't really move, but you shift from state to state. State of consciousness to state of consciousness. That's why to shift anything in the outer world, you have to shift the state of consciousness that you are habitually cohabiting and projecting. That is what needs to shift in order to shift this dimension, dimensional perspective. So the work of the soul is transformation of consciousness. Being conscious, being a sentient being, and having consciousness are different things. They are all sentient beings. Everything in existence is a sentient being. But only human, or man, with a capital M, is self-conscious, self-aware, in the sense that he can directly experience and realize his divinity and God. So that is where the departure in the unfolding of consciousness occurs, is with the Homo sapien, at least on this planet. So the work of soul is the transformation of consciousness from unconscious to conscious to consciousness, or Chaitanya, to super consciousness. So this is the progression. So the progression is in consciousness, and the consciousness inhabits forms in the evolutionary arc to experience life and to imbue each sentient kingdom of nature with a greater increment of light and awareness. So it's said that life is dormant in the rock, it awakens in the plant, it becomes more conscious in the animal, and awakens to divinity from the human state. And it keeps going, it doesn't stop. So when we speak of soul travel, really, that's a misnomer, because the soul cannot travel, per se, since movement through time, or excuse me, movement through space requires time, and time, space, are both born of the mind, and thus do not exist at the level of soul, or spirit, or atma, as we'd call it. So soul travel, therefore, is really the conscious volitional shift of attention from one state to another. And it is this shifting of one's perspective that is all it is. And it is to change one's point of view inwardly, which is the only place one's point of view can be changed, that causes the reflection outwardly to correspond to that inner change. So our inner present state is our life, which is then mirrored in our outer life. In reality, the inner and the outer are one and the same. And that is why all change in our outer life and circumstances requires a willingness to adopt a different point of view. Our present life just represents that consistent choosing of a particular viewpoint so often that it has taken form as our level of awareness and state of consciousness. Got to shift that assemblage point, as Don Juan would say, to shift the consciousness out of that rut. So the human state of consciousness is the result of our choice to see ourselves and our life as defined by physical reality, mental fixations, and emotional attachments. And it is really the self that has been formed by what we've heard, been taught, and have mentally accepted as reality. The human state of identity is thus largely programmed and established by the society and culture in which we live. The culture and society one lives in, one's environment, is, in any given life, the result of the cumulative states adopted previously. In other words, it's karmically tainted by the conditioning of previous lifetimes that we bring with us as we embody. And these cumulative effects of previously elected states of consciousness solidify and form our karma, or the predisposition and tendencies that we come in with in each incarnation. These are then embedded in our DNA and RNA at birth, and these combined influences set the stage and determine the role that will be enacted by the conscious self in any given incarnation. So there's such a divine and perfect pattern to all of this. And as we desire to see beyond our present state, we begin a conscious spiritual path of unfoldment. And that spiritual development must always be chosen. Now, if it isn't voluntarily chosen, there comes a time when the outer state becomes so intolerable that the personality suddenly evokes the soul, and the soul then orchestrates the necessary changes or pattern interrupts or dissolution of the present situation so that something new can arise out of it. So know that you have invented the world you see, and beyond the world you see, or think you see, or dream you see, is the world you really want, which is a lovely world, birthed purely of love, out of the very center of your own sacred heart, where you dwell forever with the beloved. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting, Anahiu. Deep breath. Anahiu. And sing that as a love song to God with all your heart. Just sing it as a love song to the beloved. And allow yourself to awaken in his lap, in his arms, in your heart. You've been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command. God willing, I'll be with you this time next week. Adonai.